Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything that the center relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. We're exceeding that million listener mark. We really, really appreciate you sharing this with your friends and family. Now, we have something really special, and many of you have been asking for this. Today, we're focusing on real estate, how to invest, whether you're using an IRA or something else. How do you know if the property's got good bones? We've all heard that one. What area? How to figure out if the rental's going to be profitable for you. You don't know how many people said, I've had this thing for 5 years and it's not making any money. Why? And you know what? The cool thing about it is we have Danny Bedore. He's the founder and CEO of Simply Do It. Has over two decades of hands-on experience in U.S. real estate and has guided thousands of investors in building solid income property portfolios. Since 2004, he's been helping clients buy, manage over 5,000 investment transactions over 40 U.S. metro sites, including single-family homes, multifamily homes. You know what? We're just lucky to have Danny here. So, Danny, welcome to the show. I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure. You know, it's always humbling to hear you introducing me. I'm like, oh, my God, this is all true.
Did I do that? Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Everybody, people do things for a certain reason. And you know what? How did your journey start in real estate? And you know what? You've been in this for a long time, since 2004. And when we put your information out and they're like, well, how do you do in 2008? So tell us how you got started. Tell us what happened in 2008, what you learned. Yeah. And go from there.
Okay. Terrific. So, the reason that I started investing and then very quickly, got to real estate is because as a young engineer, I got my engineering degree, started working for the corporate world. And, you know, I moved very quickly from a student who earns nice income in a tech company, nothing crazy, to a full-time job and a very, you know, I would say nice salary for a starting engineer. And I'm sitting there year into my job as an engineer. I'm looking around and I'm like reevaluating what's going on here. I'm already just one year in. And I started things a bit later than normal when people do, because I spent 3 years in the military and, you know, a year before and a little bit after. So I'm 24-ish at the time with my degree and just starting. And I'm looking around, I'm saying, what the heck is going on here? I'm looking at older cousins, parents, all uncles, friends of my parents, you know, the kind of the generation before me or the older my generation. And I'm seeing a lot of quality people, hardworking people, spending already at least 10 years, if not 15 or 20 years or more, working. And what do they have to show for all those years of hard work? A condo with a mortgage, maybe a house with a mortgage, one. And I'm looking at this, I'm saying, I am not okay with that path, right? We know to call it a rat race, you know, obviously. At the time, I didn't know to call it a rat race, but I just said, I don't know what the answer is, but I know this is not the answer for me. I couldn't live with that kind of path, which I was already on that path at the entry. I just entered in a way. And what that led me to start looking for, okay, I have an income. I'm not even married. I have a girlfriend, now my wife. You know, at the time we lived together, starting our young life, no kids, no obligations, you know, company car, you know, income comes in and rent comes out and some residual is there. And that put me on a path for the following approximately 2 years to start really looking into my finances, where I realized I have an engineering degree and I studied economics and I am real life finance illiterate. So I'm teaching myself, going to reading, meetings, you know, this is the early 2000s. observing, but realizing I'm on a mission. I need to really put a grip on this economic, real life economics thing. And as I save money, I start investing in stocks and options, and I'm not happy. I'm not, you know, I'm just seeing the risk reward is not there. I'm just not seeing how is this going to advance me. You know, I don't have a lot of money. Long story short, I come across the idea of investing in, you know, in real estate. I go to one seminar, I go to another seminar. I'm in Europe. Nobody's doing it in Europe. I'm the only one. You know, there's a few other people in the seminars, but there's not really any forum, any bigger pockets, any podcast, any support system, you know, like an ecosystem. It's not even a support system. There is no, right? Google is a startup. And then I just ask myself after maybe a year of listening, reading as much as I can, maybe a year, year and a half, I have a conversation, like a serious conversation with myself. I'm like, Danny, are you a talker or are you a walker? How many times are you going to talk about it, read about it, think about it? All right. And then I put myself, you know, on the spot and I called myself out, so to speak. And I said, okay, I'm going to do my first investment. And I bought my first investment rental property outside of Phoenix, Arizona in 2002. And that's the beginning of that journey. 2004, I moved to the States with a very clear purpose in my life. I want to work. I want to immerse myself in real estate so I can not just be a bystander and maybe know about it. I realize that when you immerse yourself, you become a professional. You will know how to do things better, maybe even get better exposure. So I decided to completely shift my engineering, degree, so to speak, and focus on real estate. And since 2004, all I've done is, besides investing myself, is really come up with ways to help clients and others buy rental properties, long-term rental properties. I call it the boring investment. And that's kind of the beginning and what happened since. I completely shifted my own personal focus and interest, mostly interest. I got bored with the engineering stuff. I actually went, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, I'm actually moving faster than I am expecting for my goals, personal goals. And I'm in real estate. I am buying, I'm helping others, and I'm achieving my 5-year goals in about 2.5 years. I'm like, okay, this is pretty nice. And then 2008, you know, comes along and shakes everything to the core, right? I should say to the roots. And you know, I have to say that in many ways, the 2008 crash is not a curse, is an annoying blessing, I should say, or you know, some say blessing in disguise one way or another, because it created a tremendous opportunity, financial opportunity. But I'm not talking about that opportunity. For me personally, it created a tremendous personal opportunity for major growth. The 2008 crash, I kind of always joke, it was my PhD in real estate. Because what happened is I had no choice but actually diving into the problems, right? I'm the type of guy who doesn't walk away from a problem. I face it head on and I see a problem. I guess I'm still somewhat of an engineer. I cannot help it. I have to find a solution. I don't know why. I gotta find a solution. And I have to be careful not to go down rabbit holes for that, but I will go somewhat into a rabbit hole to find options, not just a solution, but multiple, you know, options how to solve a situation, big and small. And I'm still that, you know, that way till today. And that made me navigate all those many challenges through the 2008 crash in order to save myself, so to speak, financially. That was kind of the major thing. But at the same time, I made a pact with myself that any one of my clients that going through something similar, worse or even lighter, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be there 100% of the time and I'm going to pick up the phone, answer. I'm not going to disappear on my clients that I helped them acquire, who also many of them ran into a similar situation. I'm going to be there. I'm going to pick up the phone. I'm going to answer them. I will let them vent out, which many did. You know, sometimes, you know, people really have to find someone to blame. If they want to blame me, all right, blame me. If that helps you mentally and it's not your responsibility, that's fine. I don't care. I want to help you. I want to help you because, hey, I'm already running those rabbit holes myself and finding solutions. So I'm sure I can have some information for you to help you. B, maybe you are actually doing something similar on your end and maybe I can learn something from you as well. So I may share with you, but you may also share with me. And you know, lastly, besides the venting out, I think it's just the good leadership. I think it's just you show your clients, the people that trusted me to help them invest, that when things are tough, you are there to help them, right? And things were mm-hmm. tough and conversations were far from being pleasant. And I'm saying it because I've seen people around me that around that time, guess what happened to them? Disappear. Or like we say these days, completely ghosted. Some of those ghosts actually reappear when things settle, which for me is like, oh my God, how dare you kind of a thing. And some of those ghosts, I have not seen them or heard them or met them online or anything since the 2008 crash. And maybe that's a good thing. So that was kind of the situation. So ending the 2008 crash for me was a significant growth, maybe 2 to 3 years of significant personal expertise and growth on so many levels. And the second pact I made with myself when realizing the growth I've been through is now maybe there is a reason I went through this. So I need to harvest all that experience, the good things, the bad things, mm-hmm. and bring it back to the community, bring it back to my clients. So help them avoid those mistakes that I've done in order for them to succeed, succeed and do better than the lack of, let's just say, support system that I had when I was going through that.
So folks, this is wonderful. You have somebody here today who's been through it, good times and bad times, and prospered, and he's showing others how. So stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Danny and Steving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. I truly want to thank you for tuning in and sharing us with your friends and family and associates. All the replays are available on savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to check out a few of our shows, check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you, solve problems, uplift your life, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Now, you can also follow us on Facebook at Saving with Steve Sexton on Facebook. And you know what? I want to bring you right back to Danny Bedore. And you know what? Let's start talking, Danny, about, you know, our audience. Many people are looking to become a real estate investor. What are the things that people should be knowing and thinking about if they're going to be a real estate investor? Because I think this is important, because I've had people say to us, it's like, I tried to do this on my own. I've got this rental property, but I can't, you know, I'm not making any money. It's barely breaking even. I've got to pay a little bit here and there. I've got a bad tenant. You know, somebody's, they're not even making their rent. They just thought if they got a property, there's a lot more that goes into it than just getting a property. So what should novice people be looking at or thinking about when they're getting involved with real estate?
Okay, that's a very very big question. And I think that it's okay. It's a very important question. It comes up a lot. And you know, the answer has nothing to do with real estate. And the answer has to do with, you know, personal steps or important critical steps everyone should be doing before they're jumping in. So usually it looks like this. Someone heard from a friend, went to an investment club meetup, you know, online, watch videos. I call it like there's a phase of absorbing information, right? We are, in a way, we're no longer drinking from one fire hydrant. We're drinking from multiple at the same time, right? The YouTube, here, podcast, event, okay, which is great. I have nothing against that whatsoever. But I want to tell you that the number one things people need to do at one point, if they really want to get serious about it, stop. Stop, you know, consuming information. It's confusing. It's overwhelming, right? It's, you know, one person is amazing salesperson, and it sounds convincing, and maybe another one is not. And also, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Hang on a second. Pause. Let's reevaluate. You should, Mr. Novice, want to get started person, reevaluate where you are right now, okay? And I would suggest you do two simple, very simple exercises. Very simple, right? You can do it by yourself. You can do it with a friend. If you have a mentor, you know, maybe a business partner or investment partner, being not like partner investing together, maybe a friend that you decide to go on a journey together, each buying their own home. Two simple exercises. Exercise number one, don't worry about the noise. There is no right or wrong here. Vision to yourself in words or a couple of bullet points, what is a qualified property looks like for you? Single family, duplex, fourplex, you know, what year, what size, what location, what price, with financing, no financing, what's the cash flow? Okay, you know, no work, some work, brand new. I don't care, whatever you call it, because it's going to be very personal to you. And I'm emphasizing here, don't do the perfect property. Let me tell you a little bit secret. The perfect property does not exist. Does not exist. Choosing a property is a series of some compromises, not major compromises, but a little bit compromises on price, on size, on location, etc. So let's just try to vision the property that if you see that property, it will be your threshold for entering, right? If it meets the age, the size, the bedrooms, bathrooms, garages, locations, schools, price, that will be an indication I should consider that property. And the reason I want you to do that is because when you're reviewing properties and you're comparing the things that are coming your way through any channel, you always have to match them with that baseline. And if something is below the baseline, don't waste your energy. And if something on it, and if something is meeting or exceeding, meeting you should consider, exceeding you should consider as well. And that will help you clarify what is a qualified property for you, not for Danny, not for Steve, for you. So that's exercise number one. Steve, do you think it's a difficult one to do?
Oh, no. I think it's a wonderful one to do, because if you don't know what you're looking for, you're never going to find anything.
Exactly.
But if you do know, you have your criteria down, that eliminates much of the search, because most realtors want to know what you want. And if they don't know and you don't know, you're never going to find anything. And that's the worst part about it. Or you're going to say okay to something, but you're not sure.
Exactly.
So I think that's a great first step.
Excellent. That's a very, I agree. And you know what? Don't even worry if you're doing this exercise about the next one. You may change in the future to self-storage, to apartment. I don't care, right? Focus on property number one. Now, second exercise, you don't need to do it immediately or at the same time. You can take a break, come back next day. Also, super important, write down, and I'm emphasizing even more, write down, like old school, right? Old school, write down all your, you know, all what we call fear and risk. Now, fear and risk are, for me, when we use those terms, are like the cloud. It's vague. We can't tackle that. How do we, it's just out there. I want you to break it down to a list of items. When you tell me risk and fear, I want to know exactly what it means. Will it rent? Can I get a mortgage? Who will manage? Can I trust a property manager? Write down everything. I don't care if it's a 10-item list or a 50-item list. I need you. I want you, right? It's your benefit. It's not mine. You're not even my client. I want you, for your own sake, to really do that and identify those risk/fear items. Once you identify those items on your end, and I don't care if it's a short list or a long list, you have done 50% of the work. Because now, once we have identified, maybe we can call it divide and conquer, right? That this cloud, you can go item by item and say, okay, how do I resolve this? How do I address this? How do I, et cetera, one by one. Hopefully you don't create 267 items and you're going to take the next 2 years to resolve it. But if it's a reasonable risk of maybe 10 to 35 items, give or take, that's usually how those lists are long. you can now identify those things and you can take that list. And if you don't have the answer per item, you find the person or people or online or podcast or whatever that can help you address those, you know, items. Now, be ready. This is not a perfection. What we want is to identify and make sure you're comfortable with the different options of how to address, you know, one of those items. Many times we tell ourselves an item or a problem or a challenge is greater than what it really is. And the problem is more in our head than in real life. But in our head is blocking us. But by identifying them, let's just say we have a list of 18 items and I am very good and doing a methodical work. And I went through 13 out of the 18 items that I was able to satisfy an answer or way to address it, or maybe more than one. And then five, I have a more of a vague answer, right? Like, I don't know, like, how can I have no money in my bank account and I don't have zero money. How do I get money, you know, even for the down payment? Let's just say you don't have an answer. I know it's a critical one, but I'm just saying it's okay not to have a perfect solution for every one of those questions, right? It's okay if we have one or two or three or more that are either no answer or not a complete answer, but at least we broke down most of it. Once we do that, there's a whole simple thinking process. And right now you have in front of you what a qualified property looks like, exercise number one, and what a risk or fear or challenges look like and how to address them. That what we just did now, and if you pay attention, did I say a rental property, a flip property, a new construction, an apartment building? Nothing. Now we can start tackling this because this will clear the way, will remove mental blocks, will help you identify the property, and it will help you stay more focused on what the next step, finding the qualified property, addressing those questions that you already know by now, and that will tremendously move you forward. And if you pay close attention, exercise number one, I'll say 5 minutes, maybe 10 if you're really distracted by your phone and Instagram. And the second exercise will take a little bit more effort. It will probably be spread of a total of an hour to 4 hours spread over multiple days to get those answers. But it is super important because that will advance you, right, towards finding the right property. And the right property is the one that you find in exercise number one. So I hope
Let me just jump in here, Danny. Basically, what you said, well, number one, have clarity what you want.
Exactly.
Number two, by listing those things, you can get those monkeys off your back so you can move forward.
Perfectly said. You could have saved me all the trouble of explaining.
Hey, folks, this is wonderful. You know, Danny, let's just talk about what are the things that you should be looking for when you're going to visit. And then the next thing is, how do we look for good bones in a property? And that might be the same question. So, you know, you're the expert.
Yeah.
Okay. We'd love to hear that.
Okay. All right. So I want to start with maybe just a very important comment. A lot of people are really want to move from the rat race and start doing real estate full time. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with it, of course. I'm the one guy that will maybe encourage you not to do that, but actually keep working at your W-2 job and leverage that income stability, safety, you know, less stress, money coming in, and lenders love that you are employed to build real estate on the side. So I'm not looking about, when we're having this conversation, in my mind, I'm looking more of a passive-ish investor and not the entrepreneur, real estate investor and entrepreneur who's moving to a full-time, you know, real estate gig one way or another, right? But if you are that W-2 person, perfect. You are in an amazing position to leverage your W-2 income, etc., to buy real estate. And my philosophy over the year, refined throughout the crash, is I love for this kind of a person, right? The one works and have job and kids and all of that, you know, and maybe live in one place and the property is another. I love a thing that calls boring real estate. For me, when I hear boring real estate, it's sexy. It's amazing. I love it. And I'll tell you why. When you go out there and you're looking for the special deal that needs work, the BRR, which is nothing wrong with it, right? Or the undermarket, it's all great, okay? After 20 some years, I have many clients, including myself, that we have just bought nice houses in nice, and I will elaborate what a nice house for me looks like when I say the boring real estate, in a good place, right? At market value, we've paid near market value, a little bit below market value, and sometimes even above market value. And guess what happens after multiple years? It just nicely appreciated over time, no guarantee, but You know, usually real estate over time tends to appreciate. And all my passive-ish clients enjoy that, you know, that appreciation over time. So I'm not trying to outsmart the market. I'm just saying if we focus on two things, we will probably do very well. Quality property, hold it long-term. Quality, long-term. Long-term being 7 years at least, probably 10 or more. So just keep that in mind. Instead of trying to find the angle and negotiate and get another $2,000 off, it's okay. I'm that way, but don't focus on that. Quality long-term was probably an amazing formula if you can use that. Now, what does a good property looks like? Well, for me, the way I look at it, or the boring property that I like, I love single family homes, although duplexes could work as well. You know, that for me, duplex is just two single family home, you know, glued in. So single family home in a suburb of a big metro. I prefer the southern state, the red states, kind of metros, where the laws are favoring the landlord and are not favoring the tenant, because that will obviously help with eviction. But also tenants who know the laws are more landlord friendly, you know, already aware that the law is on their side and they're avoiding, or the chances of them running, they're not exploiting the settings. They are avoiding the settings, right? The settings is you know, a landlord-friendly law. I'll have to be in good schools, right? Good schools, single-family, duplex, 3 bedrooms, 2 bathroom, 4 bedrooms, 2 bathroom, 2.5, in 1-car garage, 2-car garage, sometimes no car garage. And the one thing that I kind of added, I call it an important secondary that I think people are just not paying attention to. Well, I would say before the secondary, another primary is I love to be in metros around the country that showing population growth. So there is a migration into that area and not an out migration like some other states or other metros, because I want to be on the receiving end of those people. That helps support the growth. So all those are the primary factors. Of course, numbers are going to be also important, and we can dive into that if we have time. Secondary factors for me over the years, I like to stay away from the harsh winter markets, just because it's harder to lease a property during the winter. And there is a higher chance that even if I have insurance, something will break with the pipes and the insurance pays for it, but the house is dysfunctional for a few good weeks. So I'm just trying to avoid it. By the way, it's harder to sell in the winter. I've seen it both ways. I've been in the harsh winters, and I've seen leasing selling during December and January. And I've been to Florida, other markets. I've seen leasing and selling during the same month, a whole different simplicity. The other two factors that I'm blown away that people are just not really looking into that. It just blows my mind that the people don't understand. There's a lot of talk for years. People follow the 1% rule. The 1% rule means, for example, a $100,000 house needs to be rented for $1,000 per month. That's the 1% rule. I think there's a lot of problem with it, with people sticking to this rule, if you still do. First of all, many areas around the country, you know, at the middle class segment, that rule doesn't exist anymore because of the erosions of pricing and rents ratio, etc. Second thing, a lot of people look at the 1% rule and not realizing the expenses from one state or one metro to another can be dramatically different, primarily property taxes and insurance, right? So I can have a property that is doing a better than 1% rule, right? Let's just say a $200,000 property needs to rent for $2,000 a month, and I can rent it for $2,200, but the property taxes and insurance are so high, the other property in another state that also for $200,000 only rents for $1,700, the cash flow is better. Why? Property taxes and insurance are eating into that. So if you're not looking at the property taxes and insurance, you're just ignoring possible significant, you know, expense that can change even a positive cash flow to a break even and a negative, right? Versus another market. So don't follow that rule of thumb, 1% or whatever percent, dive deep. Look into the numbers.
And one other question here. How much should someone budget for maintenance on an annual basis when they're looking into their expenses?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really a question of how old is the house for, you know, to begin with, right? And the condition of the house. So I budget less for brand new houses from the builder. And I budget more for houses that are older, right? So it's kind of varies. So it can be, you know, on average for houses that we take care of, right? I teach my clients, owners to maintain, to take, you know, good care of the properties, because that's an asset that will continue taking care of them. So I budget anywhere from, you know, let's just say $800-ish a year on average to maybe $1,500 depending on the property. And when I use that number is because I know that not every year I'm going to have a significant, like there could be years, firsthand experience that I had maybe $300 in maintenance, right? Multiple years. And then all of a sudden on the fifth year, there's a big expense and few thousand dollars. So I've allocated, you know, that budget, I'm looking at it as a big, not an annual thing, but maintenance is more of a multi-annual activity that on average, if I allocate $800 to $1,500, depending on the property, you know, I could definitely have one year that I'm spending $2,200 and the next year only $500. So it's kind of multi-year evaluation, in my opinion, and not just an annual thing.
Okay. And then when it comes to inspecting and looking at a property, there's always things that you could come up with maintenance straight away if you're not paying attention. What are the things that people should be paying attention to when they go in and inspect or look at a property that they're looking to purchase?
Okay, I think this is a very important question because I want to say it's not just what to look for, but how inspection is being done. Couple of things here. First of all, if you buy locally, this is great. If you are not buying locally, like me, remotely, always use your local network to suggest what are the things that are common to this area. Radon can be in one area more present and in another not at all, or not really important to have such an inspection, right? Or general inspection, of course, but also termite could be, you know, almost always a needed one, but not always, right? So there's maybe local things, you know, Florida has their own wind mitigation and 4 points, you know, they call it in some areas, flood certificate. Those are add-ons. They're not necessarily expensive, but it's very common to Florida, not necessarily in Tennessee, or Alabama, for example. So use those local resources to really incorporate what those items beyond your general inspection. Now, when we do the main inspection activity, it's not about what items to look for, because I want everything to be inspected. I want to review everything in the report. But I also learned to choose inspectors that are now delivering the inspection report in a more modern way. And what do I mean by that? Something that's more fitting our digital era. I still come across inspection reports that are done on a PDF with a lot of abbreviations, maybe photos. You know, it's always harder to follow, to understand, where I choose companies that when I get, they come in a very clear photos with a clear, explanation, with videos, interactive. They're like inspection 2.0, or maybe I should say 3.0, right? And the reason I'm emphasizing it, because when you get a inspection report that it's more modern and videos and video and photos and fits where we are in our digital era, it's easy to understand, easier to understand, dive in and so on, versus those PDF that many times are even, they look like they're still coming from a fax machine. You and I know what I mean by a fax machine.
Oh, I know it. Yeah.
Else.
I know.
I have a feeling that you know what that is, but I'm not sure the listeners
so
do.
Basically what you're saying is you really want something that's interactive when it comes to an inspection report, so you can really see what's going on, especially if you don't live in the area. Hey folks, you're going to need to stick with us. We'll be right back. These are pearls of wisdom you're getting from Danny. So hey, stick with us. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. I truly want to thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you sharing with your friends and family and associates. All those replays are available at savingwithsteve.es. You're going to want to look at this two or three times because there's so many little pearls of wisdom that Danny's imparted on us. You're just going to want to see that. So I encourage you to check out our YouTube. Never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, UK Health Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. They're all empowered. They all want to empower you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Again, you can always go to Facebook at Saving with Steve and see this over and over and again. So, Danny, again, thank you for being here today. This is just in pearls and pearls of wisdom. Now, one of the big things that we want to understand is how do we pencil out profit or profitability with a rental? Okay. I don't expect you to pull up the whiteboard, but if you can just talk people through what they should be looking at, the expenses and all that, whether something actually makes sense, because they might find that property, they want that property because it has everything they want, but it might not be profitable.
Okay. So this is a very, very, very important question that I had to tackle as part of the crash or coming out of the 2008 crash. Because I will tell you, I will admit, the way I was going about analyzing financially properties before the crash was almost like a napkin kind of a thing. Maybe a fancy napkin. And it was really superficial, really superficial. And after the crash, I realized that one of the things that I need is to create a tool for myself, my clients, that will be a very reliable, strong tool. And we are using something that I created, an Excel. But here's a couple of things about it in Excel. First of all, it just says an Excel. It's just a fancy Excel. But that Excel does not forget to include different things. And I've seen others just don't, right? For example, real estate is what I call not the big numbers game, but the small numbers game, right? $50 here, $100 here a month, that adds up very quickly and can change things dramatically. So in my Excel, I don't forget vacancy, which I see that people are very comfortable forgetting, or HOA, or leasing fee, right? Leasing, it's when we release the house, there's a leasing fee that typically, assuming I'm not self-managing, a property management company will charge, right? So those little fees, one way or another, they're there and they're easily forgotten because I've seen people forget, okay? So keep that in mind, just generally speaking about properly financially and analyzing. The second thing I want to say about that is that it's really important how you approach any Excel, okay? Because there's a very known philosophy out there. I analyze properties in a worst case scenario. I want to tell you something. I analyzed hundreds of properties as a worst case scenario when I got started. And every single one of those worst case scenario did not pass the test, did not. So I have a cemetery of great real estate properties that I declined to invest in because they did not, pass the worst case scenario. So that's a problem. I think that for me, that was a problem I had to tackle. How do I approach the Excel, any Excel, where the worst case scenario will always fail? The best case scenario, we don't want to use it. I found the middle ground. I nickname it the realistic case scenario. You know what? Realistic case scenario with a little bit being conservative, right? I'm not approaching it too realistically, but I'm being a little bit cautious. So I'm maybe knocking off the rent a little bit. I'm maybe not increasing some expenses. I'm not doing worst case. No property will survive the worst case. I have the confidence of 20 years, thousands of investment, 10 of thousands or many 10 of thousands property analysis to prove that for us so far, 20 years in, or maybe I should say 15 plus years in, that Excel, that approach is working well, right? Not perfect. We had mistakes. Market dictates. We don't know everything up front, but it works. So very important to use a tool, how you approach that tool, and then make sure you come in and you don't savage or bully that Excel, and you're gonna end up doing nothing because the worst case doesn't work.
Danny, let me ask this question. When you say, HOA is a fee, listing fee, things like that, but how do you account for vacancies when you're looking at the finances and penciling something in? What should somebody be looking at? Hey, do I say it's going to be not rented for a month or two? What does that mean to me? Is it something like that?
The simple is say, here's the effective, here's the real rent or the actual or the projected rent, and this is the effective rent. The effective rent, let's just say instead of $1,000 per month, the effective rate, is maybe $950 or $925, factoring into vacancy. Our Excel knows to do it a little bit more intelligently because it takes multiple years and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But we definitely factor it in one way or another. Again, I can abuse it. I can say the vacancy is 10%. And then I will be, kind of bullishing my own Excel. So we don't use 10%, but we could if someone wants to do that, and then the numbers will be impacted.
Yeah,
so
I actually talked to somebody who has a situation where they're in a college town and they have a new renter every year. But the problem is they miss a month or two during the summertime before the next renter comes in. So they always find that they're missing a month.
Absolutely.
Or a month and a half or two, and that creates problems with their profitability. And they, you saying that, you should factor in rentals or the vacancy is something that I can tell they're not doing just by what you just said. And that makes a difference.
You know, what you just said is a very easy situation, because it's very predictable. Every year, this house is going to be rented 11 out of 12 months. That's a constant, that's a given to that type of a property. It's easy to change the Excel and allocate that type of vacancy factor. Maybe it needs to be a certain percentage or allocated differently. But when we analyze, the analysis Excel that I've built, it's not an accounting system. It takes into consideration every month is exactly the same. And actually the way we look at it or the way I build it is I don't measure the performance on a monthly or the first year kind of a way. I actually measure 30 years. It's more like a business template for the property for the next 30 years with some assumptions, right? And then we take in the Excel, we do, okay, here's the performance of this property because it's a long-term investment in the first 5 years. So let me just look at the first five and see how this property is performing on average per year in the first five or on average per year in the first 10. And I just look at the bigger span and not just what's happening on this month or that month, because this is not an accounting system, but I do take into consideration vacancy, repairs. That's also why when you asked me earlier about maintenance, I can hold the maintenance. In 5 years, I will have a more, more average maintenance number, right, per year. And that's how we analyze. So the second thing is maybe don't focus on the first month or don't even focus on the first year if you're buying long-term rental, because that is not really telling you the entire story, right? If you're buying a long-term rental, I don't analyze in less than 5 years. I want to see the performance in 5 years, and then I'll do, like annual averages for that, right? Just little tweaks, but are really helping with, setting some clarification and expectations and proper ones when analyzing properties financially.
Hey, Danny, we got about 3 minutes left. I'd like you to talk about how people can invest in real estate using their IRA, and then talk about how people can get a hold of you. If there's resources that you can offer, that would be wonderful.
Sure, sure. So because we don't have a lot of time, I'm just going to say, if you're not aware, you can allocate some of your retirement funds into a different kind of setting, like a self-directed IRA, a solo 401k. There are different programs out there that you as a person need to shift the funds around and position them with a different type of custodians that will enable you to self-manage. Self-management, you're calling the shots. The problem is that if you are with Fidelity, Charles Schwab and such, they won't let you do that the same way, right? They have different regulation. So you have to pull money out when you can, if you can, reposition. So that's a hustle, right? You got to put the funds in such a way that you can decide how to, deploy them. Real estate is another way how to deploy. There's some rules and regulations that are not complicated to follow. And you can invest in real estate through your retirement account once it's positioned with one of those custodians. And guess what? I know you'll be very surprised. There are even mortgages and loans available for such activity, right? It's just a little bit different than our conventional mortgages when we buy a property, but there are programs out there that will let you buy through and leverage, and obtain a mortgage through your retirement account. So it's doable, been done for years, just a little bit hustle administrative to kind of shift things around. But once you do, you are ready with your retirement account for real estate investing. Hopefully that's...
Perfect. So how can people get a hold of you if they need your help?
Sure.
And we've got about 45 seconds.
Okay. So my web identity is Simply Do It, right? Simply Do It. Anywhere you will search online, Danny, Simply Do It, real estate, Simply Do It. You'll get to our website, simplydoit.net, or you'll find me on YouTube, on Facebook, etc. So if you just take Simply Do It and remember that, you can probably find me rather easily.
Perfect. Hey, Danny, I want to thank you for being here today. You shared so many pearls of wisdom that I think it'll make it a lot easier for people. I have a feeling there's a lot of people who are going to reach out to you just because they want your help and maybe become clients. So thanks again for being here. Possibly like to have you back again, if that's okay. And with that, everybody stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Saving with Steve.
Thank you. Goodbye.
No, you're perfect.
Perfect.
So, I just want to say thanks again for being here. All you just need to do is cancel out or go off. But this is going to get edited. It will air in approximately 2 weeks from now on Tuesday, starting in Florida, going all the way to California through different radio stations.
Nice.
And then a couple of weeks after that, it goes to 150 streaming sites. Wow. It's all parsed out, so it keeps getting shown. And then it goes overseas. So it'll probably get shown 8-9 times in the course of about 5 to 7 weeks.
Amazing.
Okay.
Wow.
So sometimes you get flooded. Sometimes they trickle and then flood. Sometimes it just trickles. Okay. So it is what it is. I just tell people up front because I've had people that I didn't think it would trickle, that it turned into a flood. And and one guy goes, I got 800 phone calls.
Perfect. I love it.
So,
I love it.
I don't know how it's going to work, but if you have, we're going to put your website up on our website. If you have any type of resource that you'd like to share with us, just have your PR person email it over. We'll make sure it's on the website so people can get to it. Because the more resources we have, the better it is for them to contact you.
I'll let Denise, I already have something in mind. She needs to put it together. I mean, I want to package two things and send it over to you. No problem. Thank you very
much. Hey, have a good one, Danny. Thanks a million.
Yes, you too. Nice. Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. With that, folks, I want to thank you for joining us here on Saving with Steve. I appreciate you sharing it with your friends, family, and associates. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. They're all dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your life, and live a personal financial freedom. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. With that, I wish you well.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.